chapter 44. It's page 45 in your pew Bibles. There are several pleading speeches recorded in the Bible. Abigail's is one to David. Please don't come massacre my household. And this is another one by Judah to the commander in Egypt, who turns out to be his brother. And he commanded the steward of his house, saying, "Fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Also put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money." So he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. As soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away, they and their donkeys. When they had gone out of the city and were not yet far off, Joseph said to his steward, "Get up, follow the men. And when you overtake them, say to them, 'Why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks and with which he indeed practices divination? You have done evil in so doing.'" So he overtook them and he spoke to them these same words. And they said to him, "Why does my Lord say these words? Far be it from us that your servants should do such a thing. Look, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die, and we also will be my Lord's slaves." And he said, "Now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless." Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. So he searched. He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, and each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. So Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there. And they fell before him on the ground. And Joseph said to them, "What deed is this you have done? Did you not know that such a man as I can certainly practice divination?" Then Judah said, "What shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found." But he said, "Far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father." Then Judah came near to him and said, "O my lord, please let your servant speak a word in my lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh. My lord asked his servant, saying, 'Have you a father or a brother?' And we said to my lord, 'We have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age who is young. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him.' Then you said to your servants, 'Bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him.' And we said to my lord, 'The lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die.' But you said to your servants, 'Unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall see my face no more.' So it was, when we went up to your servant my father, that we told him the words of my lord. And our father said, 'Go back and buy us a little food.' But we said, 'We cannot go down. If our youngest brother is with us, then we will go down. But we may not see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us.' Then your servant my father said to us, 'You know that my wife bore me two sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, "Surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. But if you take this one also from me, and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. Now therefore, when I come to your servant my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen when he sees that the lad is not with us, that he will die. So your servants will bring down the gray of your servant our father with sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, "If I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? Lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father." That's the conclusion of Judah's plea to Pharaoh. How could I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? And that concluding plea of Judas told Joseph what he wished to know. These were changed men. Judah was ready to offer himself as a substitute for his brother Benjamin. He would be a slave and Benjamin would go free. We're going to look briefly at how Joseph came to be ruler of Egypt, how his brothers came to bow down to him, and then back again at Judah's speech to Joseph with the concluding question and what it means. 2 years after Joseph interpreted the dreams of the butler and the baker, Pharaoh had two troubling dreams. In the first dream, he saw nice fat cows come out of the Nile, and then he saw seven skinny cows come out, and then the seven skinny cows ate up the seven fat cows. And in the second dream, he saw seven full ears of grain, and then he saw seven just wind and sand and sun-scorched, useless grain, and the second ate up the first. And he was troubled, just like the butler and the baker were troubled. And so his servants asked, "What's the trouble?" And he told them he'd had two dreams and he did not know what they meant. So they summoned the wise men. He told them the dreams. They did not have an interpretation. And then the butler remembered Joseph 2 years late. And the butler said, "I remember when Pharaoh was angry with his servant, that there was a prisoner, a Hebrew, in prison. And he told me the meaning of my dream." He can help Pharaoh. Pharaoh said, "Well, bring him then." And there's a nice note that word was sent to the prison. Joseph was ordered to clean up, shave his beard, look presentable, and came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said, "I've had dreams." And again, Joseph begins exactly the same way as he did with the butler and the baker. He says, "God can give the interpretation of the dreams. Tell me the dreams." So Pharaoh told both dreams to Joseph, the one of the fat cows and then the skinny cows eating them up, and the fat ears of grain and the blasted ears of grain, and the useless ones eating up the good ones. Joseph said, "Here is the meaning. God is about to send seven fat years of wonderful harvest to Egypt, and then 7 years of no harvest at all. And the 7 years will be so bad that everybody will forget that you have the seven good years. And the fact that he gave you the same dream twice means he intends to do this soon." And then Joseph, in what has always struck me as a quite bold move, gave unsolicited advice to Pharaoh. Having explained the dreams, he said, "Now I suggest that a wise man be made overseer of Egypt and gather up extra grain in the good years and store them, and then there will be food stored for the seven bad years." Do you know how hard it is for governments to run surpluses year after year after year? Governments don't like to run surpluses. This was going to be surplus taxation, and they would tax the people and gather grain, or they would buy the people and gather grain and store it and store it and store it and store it, and run 7 years of budget surplus. And then when you had seven bad years, they would use all the surplus they'd had for those 7 years. Excellent advice. I've known very few governments ever to follow it. I know a couple that have followed it, actually. The old government in Constantinople in the year 1000 and 1100, 1200, they actually used to follow this, but not very often. And Pharaoh turned to his advisors and said, "Well, here is a wise man Who could we have better than this man who's given us the interpretation of the dreams and good advice? And so Pharaoh, right on the spot, apparently, makes Joseph the overseer and hands things into Joseph's power and says, you'll be second in the kingdom after me. And what's missing from the story is all of the work that Joseph did for the next 7 years. The building of granaries, the figuring out how to get the extra food out of the peasants' hands, not easy. The storing it in some sort of legitimate fashion with records kept, building it in such a way that the rats don't eat half of it, and so on and so on. This was a major bureaucratic undertaking. Even in Egypt, which is very easy to rule because everybody lives within 5 miles of the Nile on either side. All right, no mountains to go run away and hide to. You can go to the desert and die, but otherwise you're safe. So Egypt's easy to rule. But even with all that, to do this, this is a tremendously successful undertaking that Joseph oversees. And so, although the story says Joseph is instantly made overseer overnight, my guess is it was more of a little long-term process until Pharaoh really saw that this man is the real deal as an administrator. God is with him. Whatever he does prospers. And if Joseph is in charge, it will succeed. So Joseph, by the time the 7 years is up, certainly is the second person, and maybe he was the entire 7 years. But that is an immense accomplishment to have stored that much food. And then the famine began. And the famine is not only just around the Nile. The famine is all over the ancient Near East. So there's no rain in Canaan either. And if you think about the climate and geography, what we're talking about is there's no rain at the headwaters of the Nile way down in Africa further. And there's no rain in Canaan. And there may well have been no rain in the Eastern Mediterranean. We have records from other sources of long, long droughts, worse than anything we've seen in this country in our last 200 years in recorded history. So a drought began, and there's soon no food in Canaan. Nothing grows. And if nothing grows, pretty soon there's nothing for the sheep or goats to eat either. And not long, they're hungry. So Jacob says to his 10 sons, but not to Benjamin, go down to Egypt and come back and buy grain. And because Jacob was a wealthy man, he had silver and gold, so he could pay for it. And the sons go down. And when the sons arrive in Egypt, Joseph recognizes them, and they don't recognize Joseph. How old was Joseph when they sold him? He was 17. How old is Joseph now? Well, if you take, he's 30 when he becomes ruler of Egypt. Add 7 years for 7 good years, that makes him 37. Add a year or two for famine, and Joseph is approaching 40. And if I think back to, some of you at 17, and some of you as you approach 40, and I know you, I can see differences. In fact, I can see differences when I look at pictures of me of 20 years, 25 years. And Joseph is dressed in a totally different style. He's dressed like an Egyptian. He speaks Egyptian. They don't recognize him. And why would they? They have no expectation in running into Joseph here. Joseph recognizes them, of course. They're all older than he is. And 10 men, this is easy. So he recognizes the 10. And as soon as he sees them, I think the story doesn't tell you what's going on, but Joseph decides to find out, are these the same men who would sell their brother into slavery? And he sets up everything that happens in the rest of the story until Judah speaks to him with this goal. He's going to maneuver things so that they have a choice. Sell Benjamin into slavery and go free? Will they do that? Will they do the same thing to Benjamin that they did to Joseph? That's what's going on in the whole rest of the story here. So the first thing is you have to get Benjamin down there. So he asks questions about which he at least knows one of the answers. So tell me about your family. Nice, get acquainted conversation. Well, we are 10 brothers. Originally, there were 12. One was killed. There's one back with our father. He's the youngest. Yes, but does your father live? Oh, yes, he's still alive. He's an old man now. And you have a younger brother. Yes, you have a younger brother. Well, you know what? You guys are spies. I don't believe a word you say. And you know what? I want to keep you all here. I'll send one back. And to prove that you guys are telling me the truth, that one's got to come back with the one brother that's not here. And then I'll know you guys are telling me the truth. So he claps all three of them, all 10 of them, into prison for 3 days. At the end of the 3 days, he brings them out and he says, I am a kind and generous man. I'll only keep one. And the rest of you go back. And then next time you come down, and Joseph knows there will be a next time. The brothers may not know there's going to be a next time, but Joseph knows. The next time you come back, bring your younger brother with you, or we're not doing business and I won't see you and you'll go away empty-handed. So the brothers go back and Joseph chooses one to stay. If you know the history of the sons of Jacob, he chooses Simeon, who is probably the worst character of all of the brothers. I won't go into the details for that. He chooses number two, Simeon. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, that's the first four. And he chooses the worst of them, Simeon. So Simeon stays in prison. He doesn't say Simeon. He says, that one stays with me. Others go back. On their way, one of them checks his grain sack, and there's all the money put back in there. Can you say trouble? And when they get back to Jacob, they check, and they all have their money. Have you ever been framed? Joseph has framed these guys. He's given all the money back and they're all set up for when they come back out to Egypt. He says, you walk off with your money. So the brothers are afraid to go back and they tell their father the whole story. And he says to them, what were you thinking to tell him you had another brother? And they said, how could we know he was going to demand that we send another brother with him? Well, he's not going. Whatever happens, he's not going. I don't care how hungry yet, he's not going. Reuben speaks up and says, well, if things go on like this, we're going to have to go back soon. I will stand for my progenitor if he doesn't come back. You know, Reuben always speaks first, and then he doesn't seem to follow through, because it's not Reuben, it's Judah in the end. Just like when Joseph was sold, it was Reuben who was going to save Joseph, but in the end it's Judah who called the shots. So Reuben speaks, and they eat up all their food, and time passes, and after a while, the brothers go to Jacob and they say, we need food. Jacob says, well, you can't have Benjamin. And they say, well, if you don't let Benjamin go with us, we're not going. And the brothers win the standoff with their father because they're hungry. And the father says, all right, well, if you go, take a present with you. Take honey and pistachios and almonds and spices and myrrh and double the money you had last time. And take Benjamin. And Judah says, I will stand surety for my brother Benjamin. If something happens to him, I will take his place. So back they go, 10 brothers again. Not Joseph and not Simeon, but 10 brothers, including Benjamin. And when they arrive, Joseph could not be more pleasant. He says, ah, welcome. You're going to have dinner at my house today. And the brothers are rightly uneasy. They talk to the steward who is arranging everything while the meal is being prepared, the animals killed, the feast set out. And they say to the steward, look, we brought back our money. The steward says, don't worry about the money. We have your money. And they go to the house. Joseph shows up after he's done his work for the morning. It's probably about 2 in the afternoon by our clock. And the day is over. They wash their feet. They have them seat. Joseph returns. He asks politely about his father. He sees Benjamin. He's having trouble carrying this whole game through. He leaves the room and cries, washes his face, and comes back. And then the steward seats them in order of age. I've always liked that nice touch. The steward's been instructed who's who, and he seats Reuben, and then Simeon, and then Levi, and then Judah. I thought of memorizing all 12 just to impress you, but that's as much as I remember. And he gets all the way down to Benjamin last of all. And they look at each other, and the mathematicians calculate the odds of this happening this way. Probably not precisely, but they have some sense that mathematically this is a very unusual success because they're very close in age, all of them. Joseph and the brothers are all born within at most 12 years. And there's probably less than that between some of the brothers. So by now, they're all over 40, and it's hard to tell them apart by age, I suspect. Except for Benjamin, he's a lot younger. So that's easy. The meal begins. The wine comes out. The Bible says they all begin to relax and enjoy themselves. Joseph sits at a separate table, and the closest we come to those kinds of feasts is Thanksgiving in this country, and we don't come close to the abundance of food, absolute abundance of food. When my wife and I lived in Cyprus, we discovered we were breaking an old ancient rule of politeness, which is that when you are a guest at somebody's house, the polite thing is not to clean your plate off. The American thing is you got to clean the plate. I grew up with that. My wife grew up with that. All right. In Cyprus, this whole ancient Middle East, you don't clean your plate off. Because if you clean the plate clean, that's sending the message, you haven't fed me enough. I'm not satisfied yet. So we would go to people's houses, clean our plates, and more food would appear. And we'd clean our plates, and more food would appear. And then at our house, all right, they clean their plates, and we think, okay, meal's over. So we did it wrong. But what I want to get across is the food on Joseph's table is just probably enough to feed a regiment or something. It's just a huge variety and wonderful food. And so he'd be sending food from his table to the brothers, and Benjamin kept getting extra huge amounts of food. Doesn't mean he had to eat it all. When I was a kid, I used to think, poor Benjamin. But it was just a way of showing honor and respect. So they have a wonderful meal. And then Joseph says, all right, on your way. You can have Simeon back. And they're happy. And they load up the donkeys. And the bags are full of grain. And they head back home. Everything has worked out better than the brothers could ever have expected. Their hopes exceeded. Jacob will be so happy. And they haven't gone very far. And Joseph sends the steward after them. And the steward catches up to them and he says, you wicked, evil men, my master did you good and you have repaid him ill for good. Somebody has stolen his silver cup with which he does divination. We're going to leave that issue totally aside about the divination. With which he does divination. And they all say, we are honest men. They sound like Joseph, don't they? Joseph was in prison. I've done nothing wrong. I've done nothing wrong, and here I am in prison. Here are. They've done nothing wrong. We are honest men. We brought back the extra. We brought back we paid double this time. Steward says, well, I'm only interested in the guilty thief. He will become my master's slave. The rest of you can go free. I said, all right. And then they check the bags. And again, he goes from oldest to youngest. We start with Reuben's bag and we do Benjamin's last. And in the first bag, there's the silver back. And the brothers know they have been framed because they've been framed. Joseph did it. They've been framed. The brothers know this. No silver cup in Reuben. No silver cup in Simeon. No silver cup in Levi. No silver cup in Judah. On the way all through Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, and the bunch. Benjamin last of all, and there's the silver cup. Have you ever thought everything has all worked out in your life and then it's completely the opposite? I mean, this is about as big a reversal as they could possibly imagine. And the steward gives them a chance to go free. The steward says, I'm only taking back the one with whom the cup is found. Never mind about the silver and all the sacks. I'm only taking back the one the cup was found. And the brothers at this point could have let him go off with Benjamin and they go on their way. Instead, the brothers all load the grain on their donkeys and they all go back to Egypt, all of them at once, with Benjamin. They return to Joseph's house. He's still there. Maybe late in the evening at this point. And Judah speaks for the brothers. Judah, what can we say? How shall we clear ourselves? Here we are, both we and he with whom the cup was found. And now listen, Joseph gives them another chance to, in modern way of saying things, throw Benjamin under the bus. Joseph says, far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father. This is a giant get out of jail free card that he hands to the 10 brothers, including Simeon, and I'll just keep Benjamin. And this is the moment for which Joseph had arranged everything over this last year. What will the brothers do now? Will they sell their brother into slavery like they did Joseph? Or are they different men? So Judah comes close and speaks the passage that I read. If you had to, could you speak this politely? You know, there are studies about how come some people get different prison sentences for the same crime in our courts. And one study I read said that really does happen. But the people who get the light sentences are ones who know how to speak to the judge politely. And the ones who are rude to the judge, and there it's really, the difference may be 5 years in jail for somebody who's polite versus somebody who doesn't know how to speak to the judge politely. I used to have a shtick with my students about sometimes it's really not intelligent to stand on your honor, and you need to be very, very polite. Like when you see the light flashing in your rearview mirror and the policeman pulls you over, it's time to be very polite to the policeman because he has a lot more power over you than you realize. Some of it legal and some of it illegal, but he's got the power. And I used to tell a story. I had a friend going up to Penn State who got pulled over by the police. And he was not speeding, and he had everything right on his car. And so he was furious that the police pulled him over as a stupid college kid. And so when the policeman came up to his window, he leaned out the window and said, what'd you pull me over for? Which is foolish, isn't it? And the policeman said, all right, buddy, out of the car. Now, they pulled him over because his car exactly matched the description of a car they were looking for. That's why they pulled him over. So as he gets out, he's a big guy. As he gets out, he accidentally bumped the trooper. That produced, all right, Sprat, I'm up against the car. When he was done, he had 30 days in jail. And he'd done anything wrong. Not until he didn't know how to deal with authority correctly. So Judas' passage here, this is a tiny little purpose of this. Judah, you know, there are times to be very, very polite. One such time is when Joseph is totally in charge and you are completely at his mercy and he has framed you. For Judah at this point to say, you framed me, is not intelligent. So Judah speaks, oh, my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant. Have you ever started, this sounds more like husbands and wives, please don't be mad at me. For you are even like Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, Have you a father or a brother? And we said to my Lord, We have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age who is young. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servant, Bring him down to me, that I may set eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, The lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, Unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall see my face no more. And he goes over and reviews the whole history, which Joseph knows. And the last thing he finally says is, Take me instead of him. Take me instead of him. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave. Judah would not go back to his family, and he would leave his family without himself, and he would save his father and save Benjamin at the same time and take his place. Let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I should see the evil that would come upon my father? And Joseph sees that his brothers have changed. All of them, actually. They all stayed. Judah spoke for all of them. We don't know all that God did in their lives in the intervening years. We have some information, actually, about Judah. Judah had been humbled by his daughter-in-law Tamar in an unusual story for our world. But Judah had been humbled especially. But it looks like all the brothers have been chastened in the years, and they are not the same men. They are an example, indeed, of sanctification. Now, of course, the next chapter continues. Then Joseph could not restrain himself and cried out to everybody, Make everybody leave the room. They all leave the room. And then he looks at his brothers and says, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? 23 years, 17 to about age 40, from Joseph's dreams, and they're now fulfilled. His brothers have indeed bowed down to him. And Jacob would come, and Jacob would also bow down to him, even though he's his father. Joseph turns out to be a true prophet. Through his dreams, God allowed him to foretell the future, and the future has come to pass. Joseph, who was dead, certainly in Jacob's mind, dead as far as anybody could imagine to their lives, gone and finished, was raised to power over the entire country of Egypt next to Pharaoh. I've noted that if you take the book of Genesis, the story of Joseph is about 30% of the book. Maybe a quarter of the book. The story of Joseph, it goes on a long time in the book of Genesis. Why so central? Well, Joseph here looks an awful lot like Jesus Christ to come. Rejected by his brethren. Done away with by the authorities, surely enough. And then raised again to life, where he is given all authority in heaven and on earth. To use the theological language that I generally avoid, Joseph is a type of Jesus, our true prophet, and Jesus, our true king. He spoke the truth, and he told God's word, and he came from the dead back to life again and to all power. But let's look at Judah, who presented himself as a substitute for his brother Benjamin. Judah embraced the place of a slave out of love for Jacob and his brother. And here we have Jesus anticipated, our substitute, who Son of God, who took flesh in order to offer himself. And he did so for love of the Father and for love of the brethren, just like Joseph is moved by love for Jacob and love for Benjamin. So I hear Jesus' voice in the question. How could I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? How could Jesus go back to heaven without the brothers and the sisters for whom he came to save us? We have an indication from the gospel that Jesus could have refused. He says, I could call six legions of angels and they would save me from being arrested. But as he said over and over again, I came in order to lay down my life for the sheep. And that was Judah, ready to lay down his life for his brothers. And therefore, God raised Jesus to life and to power. And finally, one more little piece that ties a lot of things together. When we get to Genesis 49, and Jacob calls in the brothers, just as Jacob's about to die, he has a word for each brother. It's a word of prophecy, but more than that. Reuben, you're unstable. You're the beginning of my power, my oldest, but you're unstable. And although the word isn't here, the idea is you will not inherit the birthright. Simeon and Levi, you're wicked and cruel men. You killed a lot of innocent people back in the city of Shechem. You will not inherit the birthright. In fact, you won't even inherit your place in Canaan. You're going to get scattered among your brothers. There'll be no tribe of Judah or Simeon, no tribe of Levi living here or here like with the other tribes. And Judah gets the birthright. Judah gets the birthright. The scepter will not depart from Judah until it comes to the one for whom it's intended. And that's David, and that it is Jesus. So Jesus is from the tribe of Judah. As David is from the tribe of Judah, the birthright goes there to Judah. And how fitting that it goes to Judah, who was ready to say, take me instead of my brother Benjamin. How could I go back to my father if the boy is not with me?